Hey there, welcome to the Evolve with Nadine podcast. I'm your host, Nadine Rodriguez. I'm here to help you evolve your mind so that you can live an amazing life. I'll be talking all things healing, manifesting, energy, spirituality, the subconscious mind, and more. It's a mixture between science and spirit to help you get into alignment with your true authentic self and raise your self-worth. I'm so happy you're here, so let's get started. Do you know your inner child's archetype? Connecting with your inner child is the doorway to healing, and that's why I created a free quiz for you to take and find out what your inner child's archetype is. Go to evolvewithnadine.com/quiz or click the link below. Start your inner child healing journey today. Hello, hello, everyone. Today, my guest is Helen Snape. She's a healthy relationship coach out of the UK. And today we're going to talk about overcoming the disease to please, how to stop that people pleaser. So welcome, Helen. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, hello, Nadine. Thank you so much for having me on. Yes, it's an absolute pleasure. And I can't wait to talk about overcoming the disease to please.
Yes. Yeah. So people pleasing, this is a huge one. I guess it's a boundary that a lot of people have a hard time overcoming. I know at some point in my life, I was a huge people pleaser. So I have been working on that. But can you really let us know what is people pleasing and why it can be a problem?
Yes. So people pleasing is when your focus is always on other people and you're putting them first all the time, which, you know, is probably means you're a really caring and loving individual, but it becomes a problem when you do that to your own detriment. So you end up with like no energy and time for yourself, and you may end up staying in relationships that actually aren't good for you because you're always trying to make somebody else happy. And signs that you might be a people pleaser,
yes,
are things like, the obvious one is that you automatically say yes to everyone else. So okay. If somebody asks you a favor, if somebody asks you to help them at work, you're always the one that will be like, yeah, I'll do that. And you say it even before you've thought about it, because your focus is on helping other people. It's right. Not on yourself at all.
Okay.
Other indications may be things like that you avoid conflict at all costs because you worry that that's going to damage the relationship.
Right. You don't want to get the other person upset at you. So you're just like, don't worry about it.
And you might find that you pretend that everything is fine when they're not.
Ooh,
so you will be the person that whatever they're feeling probably has a smile on their face, because you're just pretending to the world that you're okay, that everything is fine.
Inside they're not. So is people pleasing related to trauma?
Quite often I think it is. Yes. Yes, I think it is. I think everyone has to kind of figure that out for themselves.
Right.
But yeah, I think for a significant number of people that is involved. Yeah.
So is it healthy to have some type of people pleasing in you, or should it be something avoided altogether?
People pleasing, I think the term suggests that it has become a problem. So I think it's great that, you know, we have empathy for other people and that we care about what the significant people in our lives think about us. But it's when it becomes more extreme and we don't give enough focus to ourselves. We don't care enough about ourselves, or we don't care at all, or we think it's selfish to think about our own needs and wants.
Yes, that's a huge one. I know so many people that are like, oh, I can't take care of myself. That's just selfish. I get my kids come first. My work comes first. Everything comes first. So they have a really hard time even working on themselves.
I'm so glad you said that. Yes. Many people think that looking after themselves is selfish, and it isn't.
No, you can't pour from an empty cup. So you always have to fill yourself up first, which a lot of people have a hard time grasping. So Helen, I would love to know your journey on people pleasing and what got you involved in this work to help others overcome this.
I would say I'm a recovering people pleaser. I'm on that journey of recovery. And I grew up as a good girl, right? I was quiet and obedient at school. I got bullied at school, so I found that it served me to try and stay invisible and to keep quiet. And it taught me at the time that I was helpless because nobody seemed to be able to stop this happening. And so it perhaps wasn't very surprising that my whole focus was on just trying to fit in with other people. And I thought that I was being really selfless in thinking about other people all the time. And I just thought that's how I should be in the world. And what that led to was me overworking and developing repetitive strain injury at work and then burning out. But it wasn't just affecting me in my work life. It was affecting my personal life too.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
Yeah. So I ended up marrying somebody that turned out to be a narcissist. And we were kind of a perfect fit because he was, as you can imagine, it's all about him. So he would just take and make everything about him. And it was like, great. Let's make
you're
it
like
all
here.
About
I
him.
Give it. Yeah. I'll give. You could take. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would try harder and harder to make him happy. And I just kept doing that. It's like banging my head against a brick wall. But I didn't know any differently. Wow. And so I stayed in that relationship a long time, for 18 years.
Oh, wow. Yes, that is a long time.
That is a long time. And it wasn't actually until my mother got diagnosed with cancer that something woke up inside of me. I think I would describe it as that healthy adult part of myself. And I didn't know quite how to identify what it was at the time. Now I would say I was getting angry. my anger was finally surfacing because I realized that I wanted to go and see my mother. And it was going to be a hard negotiation to do that.
And with that husband at the time.
Yeah, with my husband at the time. Yeah, yeah. And I just began to wake up and started asking myself, you know, is this it? Is this life?
Right.
Like, it's so hard. Why is it so hard? And surely don't I deserve something better?
Wow, that's amazing. So it was kind of like her impending death kind of like put that fear or that anger, ignited that fire in you to just start questioning everything.
I think something like a loved one getting, you know, a diagnosis of cancer, it can start making you just think about how short life is, how precious life is, and about what really matters. And it certainly did that for me. And it was that kind of that turning point of, I don't know how to do life anymore. Like, my life is completely miserable. I feel empty, but I'm going around with this fake smile. You know, universe, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, my life is out of control and I need help, which is almost like the beginning of almost any recovery journey, isn't it? It's like, you have to get to the point where you're willing to admit that you haven't got it all together and that you need help to do it differently.
Right, exactly. Wow, that's amazing. So what happened after that? What was your journey like? This is so fascinating.
It really has been a journey. So I started off with just simple things, with turning my attention inwards, So I started off by getting some help, by going to see a therapist who was just beginning to help me stop bringing my attention to everyone else all the time, but to turn it onto myself, because I had really lost myself in my marriage. And so I needed to start figuring out who I was. What is it that I enjoy? What is it that I love doing? And at that point, I could barely have told you. I remember thinking, gosh, I think I like running. So that's what I started to do. I started to go for runs in the park. But there was like so little that I knew that I liked.
Right, because everything was him.
Yeah. Or
what he liked, what all that, it was all about him before.
Yeah, yeah. So the beginning was just turning attention inwards, beginning to get to know myself. You're figuring out, you know, what's important to me, and, you know, what drives me mad.
Right, right.
And beginning to pay attention to my feelings, which of course I'd been really good at squishing away and ignoring for years. And discovering that sadly they, you know, they don't just go away.
Right. Yeah. You have to feel them and work through them. Otherwise they're just, they're still there lingering.
Yeah. And I had so many years pent up of unfelt feelings. My whole body was so tense, so tense. You know, I remember going for massages and then just like needing to sleep for 24 hours afterwards.
Oh, wow.
Just my whole body. Yeah. Everything.
So was it because you were just so exhausted? Like it was just so much on your body that it just mentally and physically wiped you out?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I was draining my life energy in that marriage. You know, I wasn't, in many ways, you know, I wasn't well.
Right.
But I wasn't acknowledging that. acknowledging that until that point. So it was turning my attention inwards, getting to know myself, feeling my feelings, and then discovering boundaries.
Oh. Dun, dun, dun.
I know. I was like, why has nobody told me about boundaries before? Why do they not teach this in school?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, for anyone listening that doesn't know about boundaries, they're just figuring out what's okay for you and what isn't okay for you in so many different areas of your life.
Can you give an example of a few boundaries so that, you know, they can know? Because they can be really simple, but they can also be big.
Yes. Yeah. So an example of a time boundary might be, for example, you know, what time do you leave work and do you stick to that? Or do you find yourself working overtime for no money? Or an example of like a personal space boundary would be, you know, who is it okay to hug you, you know, or who is it okay, or how far away do you need someone to be to feel comfortable talking with them? An example of like a mental boundary would be, can you hold on to your own opinion when somebody disagrees with you?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That is
holding on
one.
To both holding on to your opinion and also like not kind of getting really emotionally worked up and feeling that the person is attacking you just because they have a different opinion.
Right. Right. Yeah. Which a lot of people do. They get offended or they take it personal without realizing, hey, we're all human beings. That person can have their own opinion just as you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about relationship boundaries?
They come in like every shape and size, don't they?
Yeah,
they do. Yeah. I mean, example of relationship boundary could be around knowing that my feelings are my feelings and I'm not responsible for my partner's feelings. Like I am responsible for my behavior in the relationship, but it's not up to me to take care of his feelings, which is what I used to think and got me into so much trouble.
Oh, yeah. And I can see how, I mean, I used to get caught up in that. As you're saying this, I'm like, ooh, yep, I used to do that.
Yeah. So, and what happens is when you're so worried about how other people are feeling, is you end up kind of hypervigilant, and you're always, you can end up getting quite anxious because you're trying to second guess, you know, how they're going to feel about this. What are they going to think about that? You know, should I be helping with that? Should I be doing this? And so that can be a real avenue for anxiety to develop.
Oh,
and
yeah.
for like unnecessary tension in the relationship.
Yeah. Right. Because at some point the other person might be like, you need to relax. This is too much.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And another example of a relationship boundary might be how much time you spend alone, and actually taking the time to spend alone.
Right. Having a little space for yourself to do any of that inner work, or just stuff that you love to do.
Yeah, just stuff that you love to do. And so that at the end of the day, you know, maybe when you come back together, you can enjoy each other as two whole human beings, rather than, you know, you spent all your time together and you're always kind of in each other's stuff. And so you kind of end up blobbing together. And then also like not having anything to talk about at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to someone who's, let's say, in a relationship right now where they are doing all the people pleasing and, you know, they need to stop? What's a little, like, I guess, baby step that they can start with?
I would say start small. So start with just noticing, you know, when you're going into kind of people pleasing patterns, you know, who is it with, like, when does it happen? Because there will be particular triggers.
Okay, I bet.
Yes. And if possible, like, take some time for yourself, because it can be really helpful for somebody that's on this recovery journey from people pleasing to have that time by themselves, because it's then time that you're not caught up thinking about everyone else. Like, it's just time for you. This is why I found it really helpful to start a meditation practice, actually. You know, aside from all the benefits of meditation about, you know, sort of stepping back from your thoughts and feelings, at the beginning, it was just a simple thing of, this is my time. Like, this is time that I'm not having to worry about other people. And do you know what? They're okay. You know, I thought like the world was going to end if I wasn't busy worrying about other people all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out that the world does carry on turning. It's amazing.
So, yeah. So, question about that though, do people that are people pleasers, do they have a hard time being alone? So is that just like they need to be around other people, even if it's not, I guess, you know, the relationship they're in, they just have a hard time in general being alone?
Yeah. A people pleaser in recovery, I think it depends on what stage they're at. So at the beginning of your recovery journey, it can be really hard to be on your own, because your focus is always on your relationship with other people and you're kind of anxious about that. So you need to be with the other people to be checking that everything is okay.
Right.
And then
right.
As you go on your recovery journey and you start to build a relationship with yourself, and you can kind of bear to turn that attention inwards, then you actually begin to like spending time with yourself. I never used to like spending time by myself. I now love it.
And same. Then, I'm like, I enjoy my own company. And I never, oh my God, 10 years ago, I could never say that.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really good to hear. But then there's like another step on the recovery journey where it's like, okay, well, I now like being by myself, but now I'm noticing how I fall back into people-pleasing patterns with other people. So it's almost like you then don't like being with other people. because you now have the awareness of how you fall back into old patterns. And that's very hard. And then it's learning things like self-compassion about the fact that we fall back into our old patterns, and knowing that actually that's part of the recovery journey, you know, that it's not all going to be one straight line, you know, that you will.
Oh, right. It was only that easy.
Yeah. That there will be days when you fall back into your old patterns and you find that you've said yes to something and then wonder why on earth you did it. And that's okay.
Right. And definitely just, I guess, forgiving yourself, you know, you went through it, and as much as it sucked, you can't beat yourself up on it. Cause that was my issue just with everything. I would just beat myself up, and I just had such a hard time forgiving myself. I could forgive other people, but myself, I was like, nope, I can't do it. So tough.
Yeah. What helped you to forgive yourself?
Honestly, the same thing as what you said, meditating, doing a lot of inquiry, asking questions, trying to just really question what my beliefs were, and just forgiveness exercises. Like I would have to go in and just pull myself, like even if I did something yesterday that I was mad at, I would pull the version of me from yesterday and just, like, I would yell at her and just be like, oh, I'm so mad at you because you did this. And then I would just get so sad and I would hug her. And then it was just like, I forgive you. And that I had to do that a lot though. And eventually I was able to fully just let it go.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And I've been on that journey too.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah, you're right. I found it easier to forgive other people than I did myself. That, you know, the big one for me was, you know, how could I have stayed in that marriage for 18 years? How could I have done that?
Yeah.
And a lot of it, I guess, was about understanding that I was a different person. Then, you know, I was certainly a different person when the marriage started.
Right.
But yeah, I'm a different person now. Like I know more, you know, I'm better educated about narcissists and about boundaries and about taking care of myself. And I'm just a different person now. Yeah.
Right. So and I'm sure right now you wouldn't go and change a thing because of who you are right now.
I think there's probably still a lot that I'd like to change about myself. But there is that core of peace,
right?
About the peace, you know, yeah. Yes, a peace about who I am, and just and knowing, you know, that I'm okay as I am.
Right.
And that, yes, I'm still on a journey. You know, I love personal growth. I just, you know, I love doing inner work. You know, that's just who I am. But
yeah,
actually, like, yeah, I'm okay as I am, you know, with all my faults. Right. And it's been that real process of I suppose, like, owning all my, like, different parts, you know, and knowing that, yeah, I might have like a creative and playful part, and that's nice, but, you know, like, I also have a part that's codependent and needy, you know, and I also have a part that, you know, that likes to criticize me a lot. It's just like, okay, well, this is all me.
Yeah, that's okay. I love that. And that's like, those are your shadows, and just acknowledging and loving them, that's how you heal. And you can just keep be that whole person, that whole version of you. It's just like, yep, this is me. And I messed up, but I love it.
Yeah. And what I found is that, you know, as I've kind of been able to accept myself more, it's definitely made me more accepting of other people as well, so it's that's all good for relationships.
Exactly. Because you realize they're not perfect. And it's just like, okay, I love this. So let's talk about boundaries when it comes to, let's say somebody, you know, we have a business. What type of boundaries can you put into place when dealing with clients? Because I know I personally, when I first started, I was a huge people pleaser with my clients. I just wanted them to be happy. And I was like, not over deliver. I love over delivering, but it was just like, I didn't know when to say no. I was getting text messages at midnight. It was just like insane.
So again, like lots of different kinds of boundaries come into play in the business context. Yeah, there will be the time boundaries, you know, when do you want to be available in your business? You know, do you want to work Monday to Friday? Do you want to be available at the weekends or in the evenings? And you deciding that for yourself and then not being swayed by other people, or at least like thinking it through very carefully if you're going to flex your boundaries around that, you know, so that you have time for other parts of your life.
Right.
So that's super important. And then the emotional boundaries come in about, yeah, about when we perhaps feel that need to help people or, you know, to kind of to rescue them. That's where the emotional work comes in of actually, this is how I'm feeling. This is how they're feeling. I've got to let go. I've got to let go of what they're feeling. Like it's, you know, it's not our job to live anyone's else lives for them or to fix them. You know, they've got to do the work for themselves. Yeah.
I love it. That's beautiful. So, okay. I just have one more question for you then. What is your favorite grounding technique? To just help you. You're all out here and you just need to focus, get down to earth.
My favorite one.
Or go-to, you know.
It would be, my favorite grounding technique is to do a simple grounding meditation. So it would be to imagine that my feet have roots and that they go through the floor into the earth and they meet with the energy of the earth. So then the energy of the earth comes up through my roots and kind of pulls me onto the earth and just kind of cleanses like my whole energy system and just takes away anything that's negative and transforms it. But that like that only has to take a few minutes.
Right. You can do it so fast, just like, and it really does pull. I love that technique as well. And it really does pull you out of the clouds because I could be up there and just like, okay.
Yes. I mean, yes. And grounding is fantastic for recovering people pleasers. Because it's part of learning to find that support from the earth rather than feeling that we need to cling to other people all the time.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
I love that.
So grounding is fantastic. I'm glad you asked that question.
Yes. Helen, thank you so much for being here. This is such an awesome topic. Your journey was incredible and I'm just so happy that I was able to chat with you. Where can everyone find you online?
I'm all over social media, but the easiest place to find me is my website, which is helensnape.com.
Perfect. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, please feel free to subscribe and leave me a review. I would really appreciate that. So until next time.